Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 14th of May, recording at a late 10:22 p.m. British Summer Time. Okay, this is the big picture long-term weekly review of the various different asset classes. So, starting with stock markets, global stock markets. I maintain that this is an overall secular bear market for Wall Street, and therefore all of the European markets and many other markets around the world by association. Now, I also maintain that if we didn't see the peak earlier this year for the stock market indices, that we certainly saw the penultimate peak. And really, over the last few weeks, talking about now the peak of the medium-term rally, that very good technical bull within the secular bear. Now, the evidence to suggest that we have seen the peak for the year has really increased in recent weeks, although it's not conclusive. What can we say about stock markets today? Well, first, they've all rolled over. They've all broken their upward trends. A number of the 200-day moving averages have been taken out. And also, none of these patterns really have anything going for them at the moment, aside from the fact that, okay, a few of the some of the 200-day moving averages remain intact. I never place great store by those, but I know many analysts do. As I've said before, the 200-day moving average is just a trend smoothing device. But the fact that a lot of people watch it certainly gives it significance. And if I was going to have any moving average, long-term moving average, it would almost certainly be the 200-day, because of that factor. So some of those are still holding, but they're certainly being tested. We have a short-term oversold condition in stock markets, but that certainly doesn't mean that they're a buy. It just means that they've fallen fairly sharply recently. And a number of these indices remain in overall trading ranges that had been established this year. So in other words, they haven't broken down decisively, although some of them have. And most disturbingly for anybody who's still bullish here is that the indices that lead have been leading down. And most notably, take two in markets that I really do like for the long term, that's Thailand and India, but those patterns look dreadful right now because we've seen the big top formation development. That's been evident really for quite some time, and the last rally that we saw from March reaction lows led to an extension of those overall patterns. Thailand, which is the best leader of all last year, continues to lead on the downside. So where do we go from here? Well, as I've said before, of the three things that markets can do, go up, go sideways, or go down, the best I can envisage on the upside is a technical rally, which would perhaps retest the highs that we've seen so far this year. But anything above that, well, I just think that the odds against that are pretty long right now. The other possibility, far greater possibility, is that we could see markets rally against the background of this oversold, short-term oversold condition and just extend the sideways trading range. And there's also a real chance, what I think is the greatest chance, that whether we rally or not, that we do get a further sell-off over the next few weeks and perhaps months. And factors contributing to that, of course, would be the main factors, I would say, contributing to that would be the specter of rising interest rates. The U.S. interest rates are inevitably going to go up unless we get a stock market crash, and I'm not going to forecast that, although it wouldn't be impossible. rising stock market rates. I beg your pardon, rising interest rates. And the big warning indicator on that has been the deterioration of the Treasury, the U.S. Treasury bond market, and most other government bond markets around the world. Then we have the uncertainty over the U.S. presidential election result. Okay, we could say that that's just a neutral factor instead of a bearish factor, and that would be an accurate assessment. But a lot of people had been talking about the election cycle being bullish, or the election year being bullish, based on historic evidence. But as you know from some of those charts, most particularly that one of Ned Davis, produced by Ned Davis Research, that's in the forum, that when the Republican incumbent looks like losing the election, then the gain on the year is marginal. The other factor, which is extremely negative, well, two other factors that are extremely negative, are the developments in Iraq and elsewhere in the Middle East. So the concern over terrorism is currently quite high and rising. And then, of course, I think the most important one of all here is, other than interest rates, is the oil price, which just seems to move up virtually every day and did so again today. Now, on the other side of the unevenly balanced scales, in my view, we have the global economic recovery, which certainly continues. And we also have the good corporate earnings. But as I've said all along, that's what last year's rally was all about, discounting those good corporate earnings. And I do suspect that while I don't expect a dramatic collapse in GDP growth, that although I think there's a good chance that we see a recession at some point in the 2005-2006 period, but I don't expect any sort of quick, rapid deterioration in GDP growth. But I do feel that corporate profits, in terms of the growth rate that we've seen in recent quarters, is really not sustainable going forward. Okay, so how do we actually play it? Well, I'm pretty heavily short, as you know, and I've decided to ride down the Asian investments that I still have, largely in my self-administered pension fund and in ISAs, entirely in those investments, because I certainly expect to see some further profit erosion there, but I'm hoping to offset that with some pretty chunky, for me, short positions in stock market futures. These are not symmetrical hedges where I'm hedged, as I've mentioned before, because I've shorted the U.S. and particularly the European stock market futures. And I have a significant, as I say, for me, net short position overall. Now, there are certainly dangers in that, but although I've got most of those positions protected now within the money stops, which has given me the freedom to increase those positions, the real danger here is that the short for me is that, and or anyone else who's got a similar position, is that the short-term oversold conditions prompt sufficient technical rallies to trigger the in-the-money stops. And then if they were to turn around and head lower again, I'd be scrambling, and it would take me a long time to get a similar sized position back on board at an acceptable risk in all probability. Needless to say, I would not be putting any new money in markets. But if you're thinking about those captive investors, people who have to be in the, I'm talking now about investment managers who have to be in the markets, I would only go for high yielders, and be careful, because you want industries where there's a reasonably good chance that the earnings are going to be maintained. So I would think of things like utilities, and I would certainly expect to see some price easing in that sector as well. So if you don't have to buy, don't buy, but if you do have to be in the market, I would have high yielders, and I would also be looking at commodity stocks because they've taken a beating recently, and there are good reasons for believing that, well, I believe that these are now quite acceptable. They're much more reasonably valued, although the sector tends to run at pretty high valuations generally, if we talk about gold shares and so on. But I do like the chart patterns. I do like the significant pullback that we've had, and I think that the supply and elasticity story that I've talked about daily for months now is really going to remain very important. Okay, now bonds. We had that upside key day reversal on the US 30-year Treasury bond. Now, one of the factors behind that was the news trigger, statistic du jour that triggered that, was the CPI figure, which the year-on-year result for the US came out at up 2.3% versus the estimate of up 2.4%. And I think it's often a case of it's better to travel than to arrive in terms of anybody with short positions in that market. So while the PPI figures, which came out, was that earlier in the week or last week, but were a little bit higher than forecast, the CPI figure was a little bit lower. Now, count me among the cynics who say that the CPI figure is rubbish. In other words, it's a real distortion the way it's calculated. Not saying that people are lying on things, but the way it's calculated, it creates an impression of lower inflation that's actually out there. And do any of my many US subscribers really think that their cost of living has risen only by 2.3% over the last 12 months? I doubt that very much indeed. Okay, so how to actually play it? Well, I've been watching that treasury bond market. And well, first let me put it in the context of the big long-term trend and what it means. Back in June of last year, we had the very end of that secular bull market, once-in-a-generation bull market in U.S. Treasury bonds and most other global bond markets. We then had the very sharp fall down to the August low, a subsequent big rally, ranging rally, which is the top extension phase, as taught at the chart seminar, and that carried on into March. Then the very steep descent test of that August low, and yesterday we saw a move slightly below it, and today we get the upside key day reversal. So now, first, that's a tradable signal. Although I'm not going to trade it because you've got the overhanging top formation, and I believe that treasury bonds are in a bear market, so I'm not interested in trading it. But technically, it is a tradable signal. And my rule of thumb, I don't have any absolutely hard rules except for common sense. Always try to find our common sense. But my rule of thumb on a dynamic such as the key day reversal is back the signal until or unless it is countermanded by a similar signal in the opposite direction. In other words, if we got a big downward dynamic on US Treasury bond futures on Monday for whatever reason, I would say that's it. It's completely countermanded today's upside key day reversal. Therefore, the scope for a further short covering technical rally is quite low. Now, what are the factors that are going to drive these treasury bonds down over the long term? And there are quite a few, and I'll just touch on some of them really quite quickly here, so this audio doesn't go on all night. And while you have a lot of people who are coming out and saying these yields are much too high, they're discounting all sorts of interest rate increases that aren't going to occur because the Fed's unlikely to take the federal funds rate to more than 2%, or some say 3%. Well, I don't think the Federal Reserve is going to take the federal funds rate up a very long way, because I don't think the economy could stand it. But that's not the point. And the point here is that The US government has borrowed more than at any other time in its history here, and if they need to borrow all that much, do we really want to be lending money to them? Also, the bull market was extended on the basis of the moral hazard because people were talked themselves into the fact that, well, into the belief, it's certainly not a fact, into the belief that we were heading for deflation and that the Federal Reserve was going to keep interest rates low more or less permanently. So the bull market had a classic overshoot, as bull markets always do. Then we had the huge yield curve play where financial institutions in the US and all over the globe were borrowing short term from the Federal Reserve at the low 1% or a little bit above the 1% rate, the LIBOR rate, and then putting the money into long-dated government bonds, taking the higher yield. It was money for old rope as long as bond prices were moving up. That's now turned into a nightmare trade for these people because the price erosion has been swift and considerable since those March high, since the March rally high. And then the other factor in all this is that the Chinese and Japanese were huge buyers of US Treasury bonds because they were recycling their dollars back into get a yield, and they did not want to convert out of their dollars because they did not want their own currencies to be rising against the greenback. Now, the US currency has been rising of its own accord, as you know, in recent months. So that means that the Chinese and the Japanese, have not had to buy the, and I'm talking about the governments now, have not had to buy the US Treasury bonds, or they haven't had to buy anywhere near as much of them. And that's quite an important factor in the markets. Now, how long that will remain the case obviously depends on what the dollar actually does, and I think that the dollar's rally is mostly over. But I could stick to with Treasury bonds here. The best that I can envisage is a bit further top formation extension by those Treasury futures. In other words, a little bit more base building by the long-term 30-year Treasury bond yields and the 10-year bond yields, before those yields head higher and the bond prices head lower. And frankly, I'll be delighted to see that. I'd be delighted to see a good technical rally, nice bear squeeze, and that would enable me to go in and sell short at quite an attractive level. I don't think that we will get a big technical rally. I hope we do, but I don't think that we will get a big technical rally. Although we could if stock markets were to fall rapidly enough. But I suspect we won't get that because I think that there are probably too many people around who are still stale bulls of US Treasury bonds, including some of those so-called carry trade or yield curve play investors. All right, moving on to the currency markets now. And currencies don't get, or very seldom get, big secular trends. Not upwards at any rate, because no government really can stand a very strong currency for the very long term. It just creates too many competitive pressures for them, causes their export industries to price themselves out of the market. So they tend to reflate, which is one of the reasons why and go for credit creation and flood the money, or flood the market rather, with more currency, more paper, which is one of the reasons why currencies are paper money, fiat currencies, as it's called, are a lousy long-term store of wealth. And that's been going on with a vengeance over the last few years, mostly, or led by the, not mostly, but yeah, mostly as well, and led by the US Federal Reserve and the Bank of Japan. So we tend to get moves of a short to medium term nature, and occasionally moves of several years. And recently we've seen As I'd mentioned a little bit earlier, this technical rally in the US dollar. Now, at this, once again, today I cannot say that that move is over. It's just that looking at the charts, the size of the move that we've seen so far, and a little bit of gut hunch, I think that we've probably seen most of it. But we haven't seen the kind of dynamics in the chart action that would suggest that it really is over, and those dynamics would convince a lot of other people that it was over and help it to become a self-fulfilling prophecy. So I haven't seen that yet. Although, looking at euro dollar here today, that did nudge up. So once again, having dipped down to 117.81, it then pushed higher in here and closed for the week at 1.1888, up 66 cents in here today. And we had the dollar come down just a tiny bit, though, against the yen at 114.24. You remember I've said that there's that resistance up near the 115 level. So I don't see really much in the way of attractive currency plays in here right now. That can change in a hurry. And to be honest, I haven't made a big search of all the various different cross rates. In other words, I haven't scanned the charts or all the various different cross rates, so I'm not as up to scratch on that as I might be, largely because I've been paying more attention to the other asset classes where I felt the better trades were on offer. I do, however, myself still have that euro yen position, which closed at 135.80 in here today. And I think that's a new recovery high close for that. I'm protecting that with a tight in the money stop. And if we get some follow through above 136 next week, as the chart indicates that that's quite possible, I will happily walk away, as I've mentioned before, because we're coming up towards the previous highs, and I'm not going to hang around to see if it actually goes right up to the top of the range, let alone breaks above it. Although that would be a viable option. You could continue to use the trailing stop, the reasonably tight trailing stop, hoping that one gets lucky. That's certainly a totally valid tactic, since the trend has been during this rally has been extremely orderly. Maybe I should consider that. Might talk myself into it. Okay, now the metal markets, and I do think this is interesting. I've said all along that we are in a secular bull market here for industrial commodities, and we had a 21-year bear market from 1980 onwards for most of these commodities, and certainly for gold. And we're now in the early years of a secular bull market. Commodities are enormously volatile. Read the outstanding report in terms of background if you're interested in this, and how could you not be interested in this? And it's more about commodity shares, because these are hedge fund managers who deal more in the shares than the actual commodities. You know my own preference. I do deal in the shares from time to time, but I actually prefer dealing in the commodities, but a little bit subject to where we actually are in the cycle. But the shares are getting interesting. And for instance, I've got a silver position now, and I've been a little cavalier in terms of the tactics of taking a little bit of an unnecessary risk, but this has lost downward momentum down here at these levels. And I incidentally had closed at 572.8 here today, up 11.3. I resisted the temptation to lighten in some of my dollar portfolio. I've got silver and sterling and silver and dollars, and I resisted the temptation to take a baby step profit or two on this rally, because the way this pattern is shaping up is interesting, and I might get lucky on the euro dollar. in here. But those who are interested in the shares, we want to be looking at something like Silver Standard Resources, which is traded in the U.S. or some of the major mines. Gold, I maintain that we've seen most of the correction. The way I put it is at the outside here, gold closed at 376.65 today. At the outside, maybe you've got a $25 downside risk, but that's versus several hundred on the upside. Not this year, but I could easily see it get back to and through the highs that it had seen earlier in the year. Although that's not a forecast, I'm just saying I could easily see it. The point I'm making is that we've seen most of the reaction, and gold is back in an accumulation zone. I think all of these commodities are in an accumulation zone. Now, I'm talking about the industrial commodities, because I can't, I don't see the evidence that, I don't see conclusive evidence that they have bottomed, in so much as you ever get conclusive evidence. In other words, they're not breaking up out of base formations. That's the best signal that you're going to get a sustainable trend. But they've fallen a long way. They're oversold. They've come back towards some pretty formidable-looking support in many instances and have been losing downside momentum. A few more upward dynamics would look more convincing. We probably have to wait for that. Very often, you get a lot of ranging after a sharp sell-off following very sharp rise, as we saw, because people are a little bit twitchy and nervous, gun-shy, and understandably so. Now, among the soft commodities, I haven't scanned through that many of them, although I noticed that soybeans got nailed in here today. That's probably weather-related, but it was down 50 cents to 932 on the July position. I have no interest in the softs at the moment. I'm keeping an eye on some of them. Coffee, for instance, shows an absolutely massive base formation overall. It hasn't broken up out of that base, but it's a huge, huge pattern. It may go on and extend it for a while longer, because certainly the fundamentals aren't that bullish. There's one heck of a lot of coffee around. And so something's got to go wrong in the supply chain, I think, to cause a meaningful gain in all probability. Something like orange juice down at record lows. One very alert subscriber, a couple of them actually, had said, you know, but talking of key day reversals, we saw an upside key day reversal, I think, last week in the orange juice. And yes, as you know, there was no follow-through on that. But generally, when you've seen a long decline like this, and you start to get upside key day reversals, even if that's not marking the bottom, it's certainly a warning that the decline is in its latter stages. So I want to keep a close eye on that. And last but not least, let's get on to big oil, because this really is important in here today. And you know, I've been talking about the energy shock here for weeks, saying when crude oil NYME went through that $40 level that people would really start to worry about it. And I'm not at all reassured by all these glib statements coming from oil experts saying that this is only temporary and it's just a little bit of hoarding and prices are about to go down again quickly. I don't see it in the chart action. I am respectful of their knowledge of the industry overall, but until I see some technical evidence, I'll give the upside the benefit of the doubt. And we had crude here close at 41.38 today. I've got the natural gas, which I chose in preference to, I'd taken a profit in crude and switched over to natural gas because I felt that was less political, because it's not impossible that President Bush could gamble and say that he was going to release some of the U.S. strategic reserves. That would certainly knock back the oil price. It would knock back the price of natural gas as well if that were to occur, because that would be quite dramatic. But then again, I wouldn't be at all surprised if we get more pressure on oil producers to produce more, and OPEC will make statements. But the fact is that the trend is still upwards, and when I look at the long-term charts, and you've seen those enough times, I put them up on the site, that this does suggest that even if oil were not to maintain the break above $40, and there's no sign of that it's going to fail here so far, but even if it were to fail to maintain that upward break, that there's enough underlying support, so I think that we wouldn't get any kind of big downside move anytime soon. Well, that's it, folks. What's going on? These tend to be long, these global reviews, but I trust you find them worthwhile. So, just left for me to say, have an absolutely brilliant weekend.